A63. Number 5A.
At the point of the fifth stage in that third and the third degree, love with a small L, which is not an idea of love, capital L, but which has always that sense that this is love, that you lay down your mortal sense for the idea. Therefore, we have seen that we must see that that spiritual power of principle is not being demonstrated for the sake of the mortal, to build up the mortal, to improve the mortal, to have a better mortal life, but that it is really only a power of demonstration that should lift us above the mortal again, as in the fifth day. Therefore, that should prove our spiritual life. And that, therefore, improving our spiritual life, we really make progress. That is really proof of the spiritual. If we do that, what is the next result of that attitude? Can we help but having the sixth stage? You see, this is, here you see so nicely, you see that the next stage is always what comes out of the preceding stage. But if we really prove the spiritual power for spiritual ideas, not for the mortal concept, not for mortal life, that then we get really true health, namely health in spirit and not health in matter. We really get wholeness, health. So that again we can say, well, if the question that we have to deal with is health, everybody yearns to have health. Well, what are they yearning for? Are they yearning for corporeal health? Usually they are. Huh? Usually they are. Therefore, they are not yearning for that health which is true health, because true health succeeds or comes after love, the laying down of the mortal, the laying down of the corporeal, material sense. So that we get here a completely new concept of health, health of ideas, health in the spiritual. So that we see here that we cannot have health without really going through the one, second, third, fourth, fifth stage. It just isn't a desire that we should be healthy. Let's be healthy. I have the right to be healthy. Yes, we have the right to be healthy. But what kind of health do we mean? Usually we mean bodily health. And therefore, if we get that kind of health, which is wholeness, which is true wholeness, that triggers off a last stage, namely holiness. Huh? And what does holiness mean? Holiness doesn't mean a halo on the head, huh? But holiness means what? Well, it's perhaps difficult to explain it, but what means holiness? Huh? Yeah, free from imperfection, huh? So you can see through the demonstration of health, we naturally come to the point where nothing is anymore incomplete. Everything then is whole, and therefore everything is there where it needs to be. Everything is whole at every point, and so that gives a sense of holiness. It is as if holiness would be health in every state, health in every situation, health in every circumstance, so that that health of health is actually holiness. Yes, Louise?
I don't fully understand the difference between purity and love. It seems that if you kept it pure, there would be no temptation.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's quite right. You see, in the second step of purity, all what you do is that you separate in your consciousness. See, that's why mind, spirit, soul is only evolving your true understanding. Not yet your demonstration of that true understanding. So you can have the second step by just seeing what you have to do, that you have to rely on mind, that you have to choose only mind, that you hold only mind actually in your consciousness. It's still an attitude that you have in order to understand. Whereas when you come to the fifth, it's always a living sense. You have to show forth that in your living practice, in your daily practice, which you can't do anymore just by thinking what should be right. See, it has a deeper sense. Yes? Perhaps you remember, you have been a good reader of John Dolly's books, and perhaps you remember how John Dolly used to say, you know, that the fourth day gives you a higher sense of the first day. Light becomes light. That the fifth day gives you a higher or deeper sense of the second day. Namely, you separate in the second day, you have the waters, the firmament of the waters. In the fifth day, again, you have the waters. But there, the waters are living waters. Yeah? They are not just a firmament that you make a distinction in your understanding in the second day. Therefore, that is only a preparatory state. In the fifth, you have actually to do it. You have to show it forth in your life that you actually are willing to do it. Not that you just think holy. Do you see that? Perhaps? Huh? Yes? So it, your comparison is absolutely right. You see that you feel both sometime have somehow something to do with separating. But the second day, it's only that in your understanding to clear up your consciousness that you separate. In the fifth day, you do it. Yes. Okay? So we have seen this sevenfold law of creativity again. And we have seen that it gives more a human aspect of it. You see that law of creativity as it operates in our human approach, so to say. Let's flow through it again, because we have to do that a few dozen times this week, so that it sinks in. It's a very practical law. It is that practical law in the third degree, where we come out from the darkness of depravity, where a situation is inharmonious, and you say, what can I do about it? Well, what can I do about it? I, not as the idea man, because the idea man is never in trouble. But what can the human, what can I as a human being do about it? And so the light of mind says to us, if you are a wise guy, turn to mind. Don't listen to the arguments. So the wisdom tells us, turn to mind. But that's not enough, because it says at the second step, and turning to mind, keep that pure. hold to it. Hold fast to it. See that you pitch your arc. See that you don't let in the other arguments, and that you have to shut them out again and again. See that they don't come in anymore. And that is a sense of purity, that we are purely linking ourselves with the divine idea of mind, wisdom. And as we do that, and only hold the spiritual reality in our consciousness, and see only and behold and contemplate and ponder only the spiritual reality, something within us becomes strong, becomes definite. And that's what we call spiritual understanding. It's not understanding. Understanding is a line of demarcation. Spiritual understanding is the inner evidence of that which is, an inner knowing of that which is spiritually real. And so, in this way, spiritual understanding grows and rises within us, and grows within us. And as it grows and grows, understanding becomes spiritual power. It becomes the power of demonstration. And so we have the king within ourselves begins to operate, begins to rule, begins to govern. And that spiritual power, with that spiritual understanding, begins now to govern. But it says, I'm not going to demonstrate that spiritual power for the material. I'm going to demonstrate that for the spiritual. So you better give up the belief that the spiritual is here to make the material better, to improve the material. So be willing to give up your false ideals and go along and see the right ideal, the divine ideal. And as you do that, and you demonstrate that spiritual power for the spiritual ideal, then that proves itself as wholeness, as health, as the truth of a situation, and you get health. And that health is a health in everything. Therefore we can apply the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to every situation, not only to one situation, but to every situation, so that health is being brought forth in every situation. And all that together, that health of every situation, is a sense of holiness. The fifth day of creation, the seventh stage, gives a sense of holiness. Yes. All right. We go to the next sequence. The next sequence is a sequence that John Dolly gave, and for which there is no textual authority. I think we have to state that clearly, that there is nowhere in Mrs. Eddy's writing this next order, namely creative ability, unfoldment, identity, classification, individuality, consciousness, unity with God. This is John Dorley's summary, so to say, of what he has seen to be the creative order. We have seen that he had seen at that point various sevenfold orders, not only the ones that we have been discussing at that point when he gave this in, I think for the first time or so, he gave it in 1937, this order of creative ability, that before that he had all those sevenfold orders, like the days of creation, the third degree, the commandments, the Beatitudes, the Lord's Prayer, I think these mostly. And so he felt, how could I put that law of creativity into my own language? into a everyday language. And therefore he gave this order. And we will run through it and see that I think he is able here to define really the steps, those steps in a very clear way, which is perhaps even, well, I have to be careful what I say, but it's very practical. You have that order in your notes, and so we can see, as a first point, you could see that the law of creativity goes out from mind as the fact that in being there is at all a creative faculty. There could be no creative development, there could be no law of creativity if there would not exist a creative ability in being. So the very first point is to see that there is in being the nature of being creative. Without that, man could never be creative. He could never be creative in science or in art or in any way if creativity would not exist in being. So we can go right out from the first point of creative ability, that this exists. What happens next when you have the state of creativity? What happens? Does nothing happen? And if something happened, what happens? It unfolds, huh? You see, it's a very logical sequence. Huh? You have a seed. If you put that into the earth, what does it do? It begins to unfold. That's the very first thing. It doesn't. The very first thing is not that it gives you, shows you a flower or an apple. Very first thing is that it has an unfolding sequence, an unfolding nature. So he has creative ability, which brings unfoldment, which says it first has to go through the unfolding stages, just as a seed, it first unfolds and takes roots, and then it gives a little stem, and then the stem makes somewhere a knot, and then it makes another little stem, and another knot, and another stem, and then finally it says, I give you eine Knospe, or is that when the flower, a bud, huh? And then after the bud opens, and you have the flower. So that whole sequence is a sequence of steps of unfoldment. So the creative ability doesn't bring forth right away the fruits. It has unfolding stages, ordered stages of how to bring forth the final result. When it unfolds, then the next step is always that it gathers identity, that the purpose may appear, as Mrs. Eddy calls it, that the purpose of that creative ability appears. And you have, say, the flower. And the flower is an identity. Up to that point, you don't really know if that if those unfolding stages of a seed really bring forth which kind of flower, or if that flower will be, if it will be a red rose or a yellow rose, or what kind of rose. You only see the bud. So you can see the identification is therefore the outcome of the unfolding stages. It isn't something apart from the preceding stage, from the unfolding stage. So you have a terrific sequence, creative ability, unfoldment, and then identification. And we can see that these are really governed by the synonymous terms, that mind is the creator, and there's all the creative ability, that spirit is that which unfolds in order, which says, I unfold, but I unfold in order, in steps and sequences. And soul says, I identify everything so that it is a clear-cut, definite identity, unmistakable, unchangeable, so that it can be named and defined. At that point, we could say, well, what do we want more? Isn't it enough that we see the identity of a creative ability? Now, really, we have a kind of an effect. And so we could say, well, that's that. That's fine, so let's have, that's enough. Why should there be more? Is there a necessity for more in order that the creative ability really reaches its summit, its climax? And so we come to a fourth stage. Why is a fourth stage necessary? That fourth stage called classification. Is classification an operation?
No, but that's necessary to operate.
It's necessary to operate, perhaps. I only say perhaps, huh? Yes. But it is... what does classification mean?
The identified idea in relationship to all other ideas.
Yes. You see, now again, as we had in the fourth day, that we said, these lights must be in a system, huh? You remember that we said, this is really the point of principle, that we say, these ideas cannot be isolated or they are too small. They are only big when they are a part of the whole. And therefore we have to see every identity in its office within the whole. We usually, the human mind would like to stop with identity and say, now I got it, I have it, that's for me, and I don't care what it does in the world. But then we don't see the bigness of the idea. But in order to see the bigness, we have to see how is it related to all other identities. Therefore, we must put it into a system, and that demands, in order to put it into a system, that we classify and subclassify and categorize them. Say, if we take an example from nature, as I said, you have a seed, you don't know what's going to come out of it, then you have the development, you have a stem and a knot and a stem, and you still don't know what's coming out of it, and then finally you have a rose, a red rose, you have the identity. Now you have a red rose. Is that your universe, one red rose? That's not your universe. Is a red rose beautiful when you can't compare it with any other thing? See, you have to have comparison, relationship with the whole universe. Therefore you begin to classify that rose and say, well, the rose is a red rose, and that's a subcategory of all the roses, and the roses are in another category than the lilies, you see? And so you begin to classify botany, and finally you see that the rose is just one identity within a terrific big system of botany, and therefore occupies only one place within the whole mosaic of the whole botany. And botany you can classify next to that has to do with animals.
Zoology.
And then anthropology, then you can have many, many big classifications till finally you Yes, the whole universe. So then that red rose, which is in your garden, is related to the whole universe somehow. And only in this way we begin to see the place value of a single thing within the whole. This principle is one of the most important points. So you classify what has come out, your identity, you classify it. Isn't that enough? Why should we go further? Say you have the identity man. I'd say, all right, the identity man, and I classify it compared with botany and so on. It's quite a different category. But still, would that be enough? You have to go and see the individualization of it. That there is not one red rose the same as the other. That every red rose is different than the others. So that you even spread out rarefy the whole system even more and see nothing repeats itself in being. Until we see that being never repeats itself, we would get into a very rigid classification and system. It would be just a schematic image and not really a living system that constantly individualizes and individualizes itself. So that principle operating in that system always brings forth new individual representation of the identity. Soul identity through classification will be individualized. And there is no possibility of individualizing an identity except through classification and categorization. Therefore, no one is the same. Therefore, everyone has an individual place to fulfill in being. No one of us can compete with each other because each one of us is different. Absolutely different. So we come to individuality. Then John Dolly showed another one, namely consciousness. Further stage.